We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 130. It is an early morning for us, Scott, edition of the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Usually we record these in the afternoon or at night, but the Yankees played the Sunday night game, which John Sterling always complains about, and I feel his pain sometimes. But I'm pounding the coffee this morning to get through this podcast. I know you usually drink beer during the podcast, so are you still drinking beer, or you moved over to coffee?
Yeah, couldn't do the beer this morning. I saw you giving our guy in Australia some shit about breakfast beers and, you know, committing to the beer during the game. But no, I am pounding the coffee. There's a full pot in front of me, and it will be filling the mug many times. So I'm a fan of the morning ones. You know that. I think we're opposites in the way that when we like to record. But after last night, you know, I think we should all be happy to record at any time, because it's another sweep, and it was glorious. It was a beautiful thing.
Clearly, we're good luck for this team. Since we moved to the two per week episodes, the Yankees are pretty much undefeated. I know they struggled those first two games in Baltimore, but since then, 7-game win streak. So I think we deserve a lot of credit for this win streak.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're rallying people who have not played well in the past. Some people are on the shelf because of us, but that's only temporary. And, you know, I think what we are is a good motivating factor. I think what we did, and I think this is where we deserve a lot of credit, is the no days off, full off season of shows, so the actual players could listen to us during the off season and really just get rallied up for the beginning of this stretch. And the 7-game win streak is a result of that. It's a direct result of that, actually.
No days off, asterisk, no weeks off.
Hashtag no weeks off.
Right. Well, like we've been saying, Chase Headley was obviously listening. It's the only plausible explanation for his play. Batting, I think, 400 at this point.
He's literally batting 400.
I mean, it's only 2 weeks. I mean,
we keep
still,
saying that. I know, come on. But it's 2 weeks, and he's batting 400, and he's hitting in the fifth spot now, and he seems like he's the most confident batter when he's up at the box. Than anybody. The dude's,
yeah,
just,
you notice,
yeah,
that.
He's got his, he's like extremely confident. Like anything, he can do anything.
Oh no. You notice though, he was slowly creeping up the lineup as Greg Bird was slowly dropping down.
Absolutely.
The
yeah.
Every day. It was like Girardi was trying to slip it under our noses, where he didn't want to move him from like the 7 spot to the 5 spot. He just bumped him up one spot each day so we kind of wouldn't notice. Like when you put a lobster into a boiling pot of water, that kills him instantly. But if you were to boil them alive, which would be cruel, kind of like what Girardi is doing with Chase Headley in the lineup, this analogy has gone off the rails really
quickly.
Yeah,
because you still hear lobster scream even when you put them in the pot. So your analogy was a little off. The thing about it is that it was a clear decision for Bird going down. I mean, his struggles were yes, if you will, Headley like, and Headley jumps up, and the dude is, you know, he's raking, he's stealing bases, he's bunting away from the shift. I mean, it's, the guy is doing everything. He's an all-world player at this point.
Well, like I said on Twitter, Headley stole Bird's talent like the Monstars stole the NBA players in Space Jam.
Yeah.
It was the only thing I could think of, because it was the most bizarre thing I'd ever seen, and continues to be. And we're going to get into everything that happened over the last few days. Before we do that, though, if you want 25% off in the fan shop, use code SWEEP. The Yankees have swept back-to-back series. It's awesome to see. A lot of great merchandise in the Bronx Pinstripes fan shop. I feel like we haven't mentioned a lot of the new gear, so there's a lot of great hats in there. I know my dad was eyeing my hat this weekend. I was home for the weekend. We played golf on Saturday. And he's like, oh, what's that hat you got there? So I might get him one of those for Father's Day. I did just give him the Game Over Mariano shirt, and he liked that as well. We got Rebuild the Empire, Unleash El Kraken, and obviously the Judgment Day and the Bird shirt. So go to the Bronx Pinstripes fan shop, use code SWEEP for 25% off. Another little update to the podcast, and this is exciting for Scott and I, is we have our first ad today, and it'll come up later in the episode, but we did not want to alarm you guys with the ad. This is something that Scott and I have been preparing for a while. We wanted to find companies that fit with our personalities, and we think that this is the best way to grow this podcast. And I mean, we've been doing it for 2 years with no revenue coming in. The only way to keep growing it, I mean, we moved to two episodes per week. So if we want to continue growing it, we need a little bit of revenue. So this is exciting for us, and we definitely appreciate you guys supporting us in this process.
Yeah, there's you know, we're not taking every single ad that comes in too, because we've had a good number. We're being selective in the sense that we want to make sure that there's good benefits for all of our audience. Obviously, the onus for this whole show is about the Yankee fans. It's about you guys. We're Yankee fans, so we want to make sure that everything is kind of in line with that. So we're excited. We're excited to continue to grow the show, and a lot of it obviously is a result of you guys listening. So again, thank you very much.
Why don't you tell some people about the June 10th event? You've kind of been keeping it close to the vest, getting people excited. So what's going on with those
details? Yeah, you know, I'm trying to slip out some information here and there just so we can build a little bit of a buzz for this thing, because it's going to be amazing. The June 10th event, which is the Yankees versus the Baltimore Orioles, which right there, you got it. You got an AL East showdown, which is going to be, you know, an important game at that point.
Top two teams in the division,
I mean,
right now.
The Orioles are definitely rolling. They have their pitching staff is a lot better than I think anybody expected. So anyway, that's going to be a great game. It's a 7:05 game, which is one of the only Saturday night games, which is perfect. That's what we've been waiting for, so that we could have some festivities beforehand. And the festivities, which we announced last week on the show and on Twitter also, we're doing a pregame party at Billy's with beer provided by the Bronx Brewery. It's their Bronx Banner Ale. Definitely check it out. It's delicious. It's perfect for drinking spring, summer. It's actually a very, very good beer, and I have been drinking it all week and weekend. I'm designing a custom Bronx Pinstripes shirt for the event, and all of this will be had for one ticket price. It's going to be a one price. It's going to be extremely reasonable. In fact, the value is going to be so high for this game that the complete event ticket will actually be lower than the retail value of the ticket, of the game ticket itself. So
it's mad. That's
which
magic.
Is unbelievable magic that we are pulling out of hats. So it's I'm really excited for it. We're working with the Yankees on this too, which is awesome. They want us there. So, you know, tell your friends, tell everybody, we got a bunch of tickets. They're going to be on sale this week. I'm going to send out, building up the page right now, getting it ready to go. And we will we'll tweet it out and tell everybody probably on the Thursday show where it is, but it may be out before that.
Good stuff. Okay, so the Yankees are on a 7-game win streak. They've swept 2 series in a row. It's the first time they've started at home this good since 1998, and we all know what happened in 1998. I think everyone's kind of saying that sarcastically, but maybe in the back of their mind they're saying, maybe this team can be something special. But it's one of those things where the Yankees are just finding ways to win, because if you kind of look at the numbers, I mean, Thursday to Saturday games, the Yankees left an entire village on base every game. They were 1-for-30 with runners in scoring position, and they struck out 17 times on Saturday afternoon and still somehow found a way to win.
Yeah, the amount of free passes that the two games that you have to circle are the Carlos Martinez, this season, Carlos Martinez, and then the Wade Miley, right, was with Baltimore when he walked, I forget, 7 or 8 guys up until the...
Well, he walked Holiday 5 times alone.
Until the 5th or 6th inning, and they hadn't scored on them. So for whatever reason, the Yankees, when they get in these free passes, these games should be blown away by the third, inning, second, third inning, when you get in that many walks. And Carlos Martinez was a very similar situation. Dude had zero control. And, you know, when the opportunities were there, the Yankees just couldn't take advantage of it at all. And it was frustrating watching a guy throw 99 miles an hour with frosted tip dreads.
That's an interesting
look.
It was
a very interesting look.
We had the guy from Viva Albertos on last week, and he said Martinez was their best pitcher, and I could kind of see what he's talking about. I mean, his stuff is filthy.
He reminds me of Edison Volquez. Remember when Edison Volquez first came up? I think he was with Cincinnati, and then he got traded for Josh Hamilton to Texas. Like, this guy was electric. He threw, you know, it was a very similar repertoire where he threw, you know, he had some nasty breaking stuff. He threw really hard, but he walked a ton of guys, and I haven't seen much of Carlos Martinez. I've seen 2 starts, that one, and I watched one at some other point. I don't even remember when I saw it. But you know, the guy, obviously the control is his Achilles heel. If he could control that fastball and control his stuff, then he's dominant. I mean, he's got the dominant stuff. So I don't know if he's St. Louis's Michael Pineda with like all the bags of, you know, all the tricks in the bag and just can't use them, or this is a guy that just had a bad day.
That's one of those games though on Saturday where last season or the last couple seasons, the Yankees would have blown that game in the seventh inning. And you would have said, well, they left all those runners on base. It should have been a 7-1 game. And instead it was only a 2-1 game. And the bullpen just had a bad day or whatever it was. So I've seen that game play out so many times and the Yankees end up losing, and they ended up winning on Saturday. So it kind of gives me a little feeling that maybe this team has something. Maybe they're better than we thought. I'm not saying it's definite. I'm not saying this is the World Series team, but that's a game they lose last season.
Well, you look at the comparisons. They're talking about the best start since 1998, and so there's the comparison of the 1998 team. But really, you're looking back. If you're looking at history, this team is more of the 95-96 team, where the new guys are starting to come up, the veterans are being mixed in, they're playing their role, and you're seeing that kind of develop. And as the year goes on and the rookies and the younger guys develop that confidence and become, you know, more established players by playing every game, then you see the real potential of the team. And it's so early, and not to mention we don't have our starting shortstop and our starting catcher, who is the best hitter on the team. You know, this is a team that is incomplete at this point and is still playing very well. And I think when you're looking at the whole scheme of things, there's a lot of things to get excited about because they are doing this without, you know, two of their best players.
Definitely. And the offense is doing things other than hitting with runners in scoring position that are right. They lead the league in stolen bases.
Wow.
That's another you can't predict baseball.
Chase Headley has how many? Three?
Yeah. Three, I think. So, I mean, that's one thing that we said in spring training. Oh, we hope Gardner runs more. We think Ellsbury's going to run more because he was doing that in spring. But the whole team, I mean, Judge has stolen a base. Headley's stolen three bases. Tereas can run. So it's kind of a lot of different points in this lineup can run. And it's not something we've seen when the lineup was filled with Mark Teixeira and Alex Rodriguez and Brian McCann and Carlos Beltran.
And for as much as we have gotten on Brett Gardner for having all world speed and not being able to have the feel for stealing a base consistently, as of last night, he was leading the majors in, or the AL, whatever the number was that they put up, in stolen bases. So he's running. He's going out there and he's running and, you know, he's taking chances, and I love it. That's what has to happen. He's got to use one of his best assets, and that's his legs and his speed. And, you know, it's working well.
Yeah, he's fast enough.
Damn right he's fast enough.
I mean, he's fast enough. No, what I'm saying is him and Ellsbury are fast enough where I'm confident in that if they run, say, 50 times this season, they're going to have a good enough percentage where it's worth it to the team.
I agree.
So, and let's face it. I mean, speed is probably their both of those guys' best assets. So if they're not using their best asset, they're not valuable players.
And I think the big knock was that Gardner had speed, used the speed in certain circumstances, but didn't have the feel to steal a base. Or like he just wasn't a very good base runner, a base stealer. I don't know. Maybe he's been working on that. Maybe it just means that he just needs to be more aggressive, and then it looks like he can do it more because he's that fast. So I'm glad he's got the green light. I'm glad he's running early, you know, and we're getting sneaky fast guys like Chase Headley stealing bases, and that's all instinct. That's all on the most likely on the pitcher and look and seeing something and taking every advantage that he can. So, you know, you got to give credit to him for doing that too, because he doesn't have the greatest speed by any means, but he's looking for, you know, little things in the mechanics of the pitcher or something in the catcher or whatever, and he's taking advantage of them, and it's working. So keep going.
God, if you rewind this podcast a full season and tell me that we're going to be talking about Chase Headley batting 400 next April and stealing three bases, I would not have believed you, but I just can't believe that this is where we are. This is the reality
And this is a phenomenal reality. If Chase Headley is 2012 Chase Headley, he's a real baseball player that puts up real numbers and can actually contribute in a very positive way. He's playing good defense. You know, whether you want to get on him with his throws, I don't think he's made any throwing errors since the last little rant you went on the error that really wasn't an error on him. He's been making great plays. I mean, the guy plays a solid third base. It seems like he has completely gained the confidence back of the player that he was for that 1 year. For that 1 year, he bottled it all up, and he's drinking that potion now every day.
All I'm going to say is I'm keeping a close eye on him.
Of course you are.
The bullpen has been phenomenal, which we knew was going to be a thing. Adam Warren has retired all 20 of the batters he's faced. Betances has actually kind of looked a little shaky to me, but he's gotten out of these jams. I mean, what was that game? It was the Thursday game against Tampa where he had first and third no outs and he ended up getting out of it. He struck out Longoria. And when I saw Longoria up with first and third no outs, I'm like, the Yankees are screwed because he's the number one Yankees killer right now that David Ortiz has retired. So he got out of that jam. Chapman's been great. We knew the bullpen was going to be a strong point in this team, and it has been. But overall, they're fourth in the league in team ERA. And that's because after the first time through the rotation, when they all sucked, except CeCe, the rotation's been good. The whole entire second time through, plus the first few times through the third time. So if this rotation is half as good as what we've seen over the last few days, I mean, that totally changes the outlook of this team.
Oh, absolutely, because then when you're looking at, you know, your occasional bad start, you have this beast of a bullpen to come in and save the day. And they have guys that Girardi has a lot of confidence that can go long, too. I mean, I think Mitchell struggled a little bit last night, but I think he's a guy definitely that Girardi has confidence in to you know, get him a couple innings. Obviously, Warren's a guy that has the confidence of Girardi, you know, probably more than anybody in the back of that bullpen. It's funny, Betances is almost taking a page from the David Robinson script.
Houdini. Yeah,
getting a little Houdini action where you're throwing yourself into your own fire and then getting out of it. But hey, as long as he keeps getting out of it, that's good. But you keep doing that, you keep playing with fire for long enough, and it's absolutely gonna burn you. So hopefully.
Well, every time Betances comes in the eighth inning and walks a guy or gives up a leadoff single, I just picture Randy Levine's face kind of lighting up like, see, I told you so.
I was very close to tweeting something out last night about with just a giant Levine face on it.
Yeah. At what point? So I think Clippard had that heart attack save on Saturday. And then the night before, he gave up a long fly ball that I think if it was an August game, that ball's in the third row. So he's kind of looked a little shaky, whereas Warren, like we said, has been dominant. Do you think there's a point where Girardi flip-flops them and stops going to Clippard in the seventh and starts going to Warren?
I mean, I don't think it's anytime soon. I think that Girardi, looking down, sees a zero ERA bullpen over this winning streak and is happy with the way things are happening. Yes, Clippard had – I thought that ball was out off the bat for sure. I thought it was a gone.
Yeah.
And
well, so that game, I think there must have been some sort of wind blowing in, because you remember that ball Judge hit and it sounded like a shotgun and it went to like medium deep left field. There was something going on in the stadium that night where I think wind was blowing in or whatever.
Yeah,
it was.
Wind tunnel was reversed that day. But yeah, I don't think he's going to mess around with anything. I mean, I think it's going to be more of a fluid situation. I don't think the seventh inning is a complete lock. And I think as the season goes on, we're going to see Girardi doing more toying around with Adam Warren. I think Adam Warren is going to be that piece that he moves around. So,
yeah. So when the home run off Greg Bird's bat went to White Plains last night, the only person more relieved than Greg Bird was me.
Well, that guy in right field who reached over and dropped the ball, which should have been a home run.
Yeah. Like, first of all, let's talk about that. Replay.
Replay is a
bad year for replay so
far.
And
it's gotten so much attention in the offseason too. This is, I don't understand this. Okay, so we go back and we look at these plays. The guys on the field aren't even doing it. They're not rushed. They're not looking at some small screen. That's taken out of the game. That's not even part of the equation at this point. There are dudes in a studio looking at every camera angle that's available, possible on the face of this earth. They probably have 30 more than we even know about. They could probably zoom in with all these crazy cameras and do 360s and all sorts of, and they still can't get it right. I don't understand how you cannot get that right. The ball was so far above the fence and the dude barely reached over. It was a home run. I mean, I wasn't even done complaining about it until Bird hit the home run.
So like you said, they probably have more camera angles than we even know about. I gotta imagine they have camera angles positioned along the line of the fence. So they can, sort of like in an end zone in football, where it's down the line of the end zone, so you can see if the ball crosses. Like, wouldn't you imagine they have that in baseball? I know the fence curves, so you got to position a few different ones. But, I mean, this is a multi-billion dollar business. You'd think they'd have that.
You'd think they would have that, but I don't think they do. I don't think they have those. Because well, they if should, they did, we'd see them on TV, I think. Because that would be a really cool shot, and I feel like they would show that to us.
But that's, I mean, that was clearly a home run last night.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I didn't need that camera to tell you it was a home run, though. That's the problem. The problem is that the camera angles that we got on television were just fine. The ones that we saw on television showed us that that was a home run, that there's no reason why you don't say that that's a home run. And the fact that there's like indisputable evidence or blah, blah, blah. I'm like, this is not the NFL. The language keeps getting crossed over from football to baseball, and it's ridiculous. Like, if you see it, call it as such. That's what replay is for. It's there to get it right. Pisses me off.
Yeah.
It really does. Because you know what? That was a long one, too. I don't remember how long it was, but it felt long.
Oh, yeah. It took like four minutes.
And you're doing this, and then you get it wrong? What is the point of that? What is the point?
Exactly. I feel like the umps are also kind of... So I think the umps on the field are relying on the fact that they know they have replays, so they're kind of making lazy calls. Like... I feel like the umps on the field are getting more calls wrong than normal, too.
I don't know. I don't know what's going into it, but you know, you could think that a bunch of guys in a studio who are looking at this would get it right and do it fast, because it was pretty obvious on the first, maybe second shot. You know, give me a couple camera angles, done. Home run.
Yeah. Well, like you said, thank God Bird hit that moonshot, because not only did it save the Yankees from getting screwed on a replay call, but it also got him going. I was so relieved. The jinx is off. He went 3-for-3 and had a walk. He hit balls hard all night. He hit another foul ball home run later in the game. Bird was so lost at the plate before Sunday night. I mean, it looked like he had never played baseball before. He was getting beat on 90-mile-an-hour fastballs like I would get beat on 90-mile-an-hour fastballs. It was the weirdest thing to watch. And it was almost become to the point where I was going to say, do they need to put him on the DL just to clear his mind? But thankfully, Sunday night, something clicked. Clearly something clicked, because he looked confident at the plate from that first swing when he hit that ball halfway up the bleachers.
And it started in the game before that. I mean, I even sent something out. I called that home run, by the way. The game before that, when he took a walk and then he hit a ball in play, it just looked like he was more comfortable in those at-bats. When he took that walk, it looked like he was seeing the ball, and then he made good contact on a ball that was in play. And then the next shot, boom. The fact that you know, you have to work through these, we just can't forget that baseball can really get people in long streaks, and I think it's so hard to get out of them, especially when you're a new guy pressing as hard as Bird probably was. I mean, he wasn't saying that, but you know he was. And I'm just glad he finally got out of that and was able to just loosen up a little bit, because you could tell he's a lot more comfortable at the plate right now.
Yeah, it was alarming for us and for Yankee fans, because he was the best player in spring. I mean, I jokingly called him Mr. March on Twitter, because
it's very similar to what Tanaka just did, right? I mean, it's like Tanaka and Bird went, you know, started the season holding hands, because they both were terrible and they both had phenomenal spring trainings. It's like they got burnt out. You know, they hit such a high at the end of spring training that their only place for them to go was down. And now it's, you know, hopefully we're seeing a level off and they can get back to where they should be.
Yeah. Bird is, he was moved down the lineup, which I agreed with. I mean, you couldn't keep sticking him in the three spot when he looked lost at the plate, but he looks like he's got a swagger back.
The funny thing is if you look at what happened with Greg Bird struggling and then getting tossed down, if he had been a 10-year veteran, he would have stayed in that spot the whole time.
Yeah. Teixeira stayed in that spot. A-Rod stayed in that spot for
exactly.
a long time. So.
And it hurt so bad when they stayed in that spot.
Well, that's a reason why we think maybe Girardi does better with a young team, because he doesn't feel like he owes these kids anything.
It's exactly right.
He owed veterans. He owed A-Rod and Teixeira the fact that they had the long history on their baseball reference page. So I'm going to leave you in the 3 and 4 spot because I have confidence you're going to come out of it.
Same thing happened with Jeter in the 2 spot.
They didn't come out of it. They didn't come out of it last year.
There's no doubt. I mean, it's so obvious that Girardi now can do what he wants to do. And now you see what's happening with guys who are struggling or just the moves that he's making. And then you look back at similar situations 2, 3, 4 years ago, and there was a very different decision, a very different outcome for what Girardi was doing. So it definitely had him hindered. There's no doubt about it. So I'm glad he's free again to make the decisions that he thinks are best for the baseball team on that day.
Aaron Judge hitting 7th, Bird hitting 8th, Jacoby Ellsbury batting 4th, Chase Headley batting 5th. It's bizarro Yankees.
And it's working. It's beautiful.
So the Greg Bird jinx is off, but is the Matt Holliday jinx on?
No.
Scratched from Saturday's lineup with a stiff back. Old man. That's an old man injury, like yeah. You said. You know what he's talking about. I wrote, I don't know if you read this on Friday in my takeaways blog, I wrote that Matt Holliday might have more in the tank than I originally thought because, I mean, he was leading the league in on-base percentage when I wrote that. And he had a bad night Friday, and obviously it was probably because of the stiff back, and he got scratched. But I think we might have I'm a little concerned.
I thought you didn't believe in jinxes, first of all. I thought I was the one that believed in the jinx.
Purely, strictly as it pertains to no-hitters and perfect games.
Okay. So I don't think this is anything, you know, unless something comes up later and we're seeing that it was more than just a, you know, back stiffness. He's a 36-year-old dude. He's a guy that's – this is going to happen throughout the course of the season. He played a full spring training. He's been playing practically every day. So he needs some days off. It's going to happen. I mean, if anybody was expecting him to play 162, you're insane. It wasn't going to happen. Obviously, this guy's going to need some time. And with a team rolling like this, with other guys to put in that are hot, why not do it? I mean, Aaron freaking Hicks is lighting it up. I mean, so there's opportunities now for you to get a rest because we do have players that are playing out of their minds.
So Matt Holliday comes over from the Cardinals. Do you think he used Dollar Shave Club when he had to shave?
He probably did.
Dollar Shave Club is the smarter choice. Get a great shave at a great price, conveniently delivered right to your door. Scott, I used the product for the first time, and it's an extremely good product. It's, I don't know, I know you have a beard, so you don't really shave much anymore. But me, I'm compliant with the Yankees, just like all the players have to be, so I shave during the season. And going to CVS or going to one of these stores to buy razors is the most annoying thing. Dollar Shave Club is an awesome life hack. It's a no-brainer choice. If you want to go buy cheap disposable razors and cut your face up, be my guest. But these are extremely good. I got the executive razor with the Dr. Carver shave butter. That stuff is smooth on your skin. That was my favorite part of the product. I don't know about you, but it gives an extremely smooth shave. The Dr. Carver shave butter is transparent for a more precise shave. So if you're shaving up around the sideburns, you can actually see where you're cutting the line. If you got that big foamy white stuff, you can't really see that. It helps prevent ingrown hairs and fights razor bumps. So you can make the smarter choice by going to Dollar Shave Club.
The funny thing is that I actually got the razor, started using it, I was like, I have a beard. This is not going to be a good fit. But let me tell you what. The back of the razor has a straight edge, and now I'm clean around the edges of my beard. My wife is extremely happy with it, and I do agree that Dr. Carver's shave butter is some good stuff because you can actually see what you're doing, especially for dudes with beards like me. It actually makes you, allows you to do something that you can't do with other razors and get a precise shave. For a limited time for all Bronx Pinstripes podcast listeners, new members get their first month of the executive razor with a tube of Dr. Carver's shave butter for only $5 with free shipping. And then after that, razors are only a few bucks a month. In the first box that you get like a big, heavy razor. It's a metal razor. The thing is heavy. It's solid. And you get a full cassette of 4 cartridges and a tube of the shave butter. There are no hidden fees. There are no commitments. You can cancel anytime. After that, you just have to you get the razors, which are only a few bucks a month. So join Dollar Shave Club today. Go to dollarshaveclub.com/Bronx. That's dollarshaveclub.com/Bronx.
Awesome. So Thursday's game, Severino was back on the mound, and after his first so-so start, he looked dominant against the Rays. 11 strikeouts in 7 innings, and for a while, we weren't sure if he was even going to get the win because the Yankees' bats weren't doing anything. But the interesting thing about Severino's start, I thought, was that he was going fastball slider the whole night. And his slider was great. He was throwing it for strikes when he needed to. He was putting it in the dirt when he needed to. We didn't see the changeup. So while it was a great start, he was only a two-pitch pitcher. But it was working for him.
The thing about Severino with that start as well is the fastball and slider were phenomenal. They were on. And when he was in, when he was good coming out of the bullpen last year, that's what we saw him use, right? He didn't really use the changeup very much. But then he, you know, the struggles came in when he started going through the batting order a second and third time. While he didn't use the changeup often, he still used it. And I think that's the key. I think the fact that he just needs to show it enough, and even if it doesn't work well, even if it's not an out pitch or a great pitch, he just needs to keep showing it, you know, every once in a while so that the batters know it's there and that he will throw it. That to me is the most important thing. And like you're saying that it wasn't used as much. And it wasn't used as an out pitch, and it wasn't, you know, his most effective pitch, but Romine was still calling it. And I think last year when he was, you know, getting into trouble with his starts, they completely went away with it, away from it. And then, you know, then you're absolutely a two-pitch pitcher. But if you're showing it, even if it's not good, and I think a lot of people don't realize that even if you show it when it's not a good pitch, it's still being shown, and it's showing that you will throw it, and they have to look out for it. So I think that's the key.
What I liked about the start from Severino was he got stronger as the game went on. Not only, I mean, his stuff stayed consistent throughout the entire start. He was throwing 96, 97 as the game wore on, but he looked more confident on the mound. He was throwing the pitch, and then he was right back on the mound ready to throw the next pitch. He didn't look stressed. He didn't walk around the mound. He didn't look like he was confused on the mound. So I really liked his confidence, which we did not see at all last season as a starter. As a reliever, we saw it, but as a starter, we never saw that kind of swagger that he had.
You know, I think a lot of the credit that we need to give credit to for these starts, not only the pitchers, but I'm telling you, Romine is calling one hell of a game. He really is. The guy.
It's not what I thought you were going to say.
The guy is obviously a dependable and reliable backstop that has the confidence of these guys, that when he throws something down, you know, I haven't seen many shakeoffs. They're throwing what Romine's putting down. And, you know, I think a lot of credit goes to him for taking his defense and his game calling. You know, that was why we knew about Austin Romine. It had nothing to do with his offense. It had everything to do with the way he called the game and the way his defense was. So a lot of credit goes to him. And hopefully this is a fluid situation where, you know, Romine and Gary Sanchez are working in tandem, and they can really get these good game plans for these guys and keep them going on this path. Because Severino, like you said, his slider was filthy. And when that slider's on and you're showing a couple other pitches, he's extremely tough. Because when you throw high 90s with a wipeout slider and an occasional changeup, good luck. Because that's tough to hit.
We actually have a mailbag question about Romine and his game calling coming up, but I thought you were gonna say Pedro Martinez deserves credit for Severino.
No, I'm not giving Pedro Martinez credit.
Pedro tweeted about his performance that night. He said something like, "I'm proud to see Severino what he did on the mountain," or something.
Yeah, and
like
that's great. Okay, fine. I'm glad they worked together. Hopefully, it helped. But I will never give him credit. I forgot about that, to tell you the truth. Austin Romine is the guy that I'm giving credit to.
There you go. I was mocking Aaron Hicks before the start because he was batting second, and Hicks had looked terrible up until that night. But then Hicks single-handedly wins that game with two home runs, one from each side of the plate. The home run from the right side of the plate was in the seventh inning, and it was the go-ahead shot. It was a two-run homer. So, again, I feel like everything I say, the opposite happens.
Well, I think everything we've seen, the opposite is happening. That's the crazy thing with all the guys that we have mocked and made fun of and have been on our hit list for a year plus are the guys that are looking like real baseball players and coming out there and contributing in an extremely positive way in a time that is extremely needed with Gregorius and Sanchez down. So you need guys to step up at those points, and that's exactly what's happening. And it's coming from very, very unlikely sources. It's coming from everywhere. That's the beauty of this. I mean, up and down the lineup, you're seeing guys hit, which is tremendous.
Yeah, it's coming from Hicks batting second and
Ellsbury batting cleanup.
I think it'll change. I think it's going to change. So I think Hicks will probably change once we get all our guys back healthy. But Do you mind him batting second as the lineup stands right now? I mean, it's working.
I can't say anything negative about the lineup, because if I were to say something that would be, you know, more conventional, or, you know, you're looking at these guys' baseball cards and you're saying, well, he doesn't deserve to be there, it would sound like a reasonable argument, but it's not what's happening on the field right now. So, no, I have full confidence in what Joe Girardi is doing right now. He's
loving this left-right thing. He's so dedicated to this left-right thing. Ellsbury's batting cleanup.
I like that. You know, right now, Joe Girardi probably has more confidence in... I have more confidence in him than I have had in a very long time. A very long time.
Oh, what a difference a 7-game win streak makes.
He's doing everything right. I mean, it seems like everything he's doing, every move he's making, is the right move. So how could you possibly fault anything that Girardi's doing, including the lineups, including the bullpen, everything? It's good.
Tanaka pitched on Friday versus St. Louis, and he gave up the 2-run shot in the first. He settled into the game a little bit, but then he got tired towards the 7th inning. It was a better start than his first 2 starts, but he still did not look like Tanaka.
No, he didn't, but I think the beauty about this start is that he did struggle in the beginning, gave up the home run, and then fought back and you know, stayed through the game and was, what did he get? He got through 6 and... A change, right?
6 and change.
Yeah. So he was in the 7th inning. That's what you want from your starters. Get into the 6th, get into the 7th inning, and then hopefully get through the 7th inning and then hand to the bullpen. But if not, get into that 7th inning, and that's a good start. I mean, the guy obviously has had struggles in the beginning of the season, and I think we're seeing that, you know, that next level that Tanaka is finally, you know, coming to form, a la Greg Bird.
With the exception of Montgomery, who made his debut, all the starters have gone in at least into the 7th inning on their 2nd and 3rd times through.
Good for them. That's good stuff, right? This was the biggest issue that we saw coming into the season was the rotation. If the rotation cleans up and the rotation becomes, you know, what we're seeing, I mean, it's not going to be what we're seeing in this winning streak. It's not sustainable, most likely. You know, the fact that CeCe's coming out there and dominating and pitching like not like old CeCe, but results are like old CeCe, then this team is going to be filthy. But, you know, at some point we're gonna see struggles, and, you know, hopefully we can stay at a rotation where the 3 of the 5 guys are getting into the 6th and 7th inning, and that's something that we could win a lot of games with.
Mm-hmm. They completed the sweep, obviously, last night, Sunday night, against St. Louis. They finally broke that game open late in the game. Romine got a big clutch hit to break that game open. But Pineda, who was coming off that perfect game bid, so you and I, everybody was aware that things could go south with Pineda because that's his makeup. He didn't have the same stuff that he had on opening day, but he still gave him 7 innings and 2 runs. So to me, that's almost more of a step in the right direction than his perfect game.
I agree. I think following up that opening day at Yankee Stadium with another good outing under the lights, ESPN, Sunday night baseball, you know, going for the sweep. These are all the things. Like, you're going for the sweep, it's almost like having 2 outs or 2 strikes, right? For Pineda, this is like an entire game with 2 outs. We're going for the sweep, trying to complete the deal, and he came out and delivered. And you're right, when he didn't have as good stuff as he did on Monday, which, you know, you're not going to have that very often, because that was wipeout, like, phenomenal, unbelievable stuff, and you still got through, and you could see that he was confident still, and that home run, he was extremely angry about that home run, which made me happy. You know, it wasn't the same, like, hands flailing, clueless Pineda, like, oh, dope, left another one up. No, he was angry that he missed the spot and that Molina caught it. So I'm very cautiously optimistic still, but optimistic that hopefully he's turning a corner in a contract year. You know, we'll see.
That might be the mantra of this win streak. We're cautiously optimistic.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that are going his way if he has a good year. And, you know, maybe he needs that incentive, and that's good for us this year.
Mm-hmm. The Yankees are going they're staying at home to play the White Sox to try and continue their streak, trying to make it 8 tonight. Quintana is not scheduled to pitch, even though That might be a bad thing considering he's kind of struggled this season. Maybe all the trade rumors are getting in his head.
Does Brian Cashman get even more credit by seeing a Quintana line of 0-3 with a 6 ERA? Are we giving...
Maybe this is the time he pounces and buys him cheap.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're selling anybody cheap at this point. They'll just hold on to him. But, look, got to give Cashman some credit for holding his cards close to his vest and making sure that he's making only the right moves. And, you know, obviously it's early in the season. Quintana could come back and have a phenomenal year, but he's struggling up until this point. So this is a team where the Yankees could continue their streak. There's no doubt about it.
I want to do a little bit of an update on the AL East before we get into mailbags. So the Orioles are now, I think, tied with the Yankees with 8-3. Or the Yankees not. Do the Yankees have 8 or 9 wins? Anyway, the Orioles have been good this season. We saw them last weekend in Baltimore. They took 2 out of 3 from the Yankees. But they just had Chris Britton go on the DL. So that's obviously going to be a killer for them because he's got 50 something like consecutive saves or something crazy like that.
Yeah, the dude is Zach Britton, by the way. I think Chris Britton was who was Chris Britton? He was I feel like he pitched for the Yankees in like the in the in,
Did I say Chris yeah. Britton?
There was a Chris Britton at some point. I feel like in a revolving
yep.
in a revolving
oh, God,
rotation.
I remember.
But
this fat piece of shit.
But Zach Britton is the most dominant closer, I think, right now. I mean, him and Chapman, I think you could, by looking at the stats and the consecutive, you know, innings that Britton has, he's got to be the guy. That's a big deal for him going on the DL. The pitching staff, like we mentioned earlier, is definitely the Achilles heel for the Orioles. They're going to score a ton of runs. I think especially their bullpen, you know, their starting rotation seems like it's a lot better. I don't know, last year they did enough to get them to where they needed to be. But not having that anchor at the back of your bullpen is huge. So, you know, we'll see. It's forearm stiffness. That's scary stuff hearing that.
Tanaka had that.
Yeah, you never want to hear that. As we've said with Tanaka, the forearm is connected to the elbow.
The Red Sox are 7-5, but they're last in the league in home runs, and I don't think that's going to last all season. So I think their offense is going to be good. They've got a ton of great hitters, so they're winning despite not having their best their offense really click. So that's something to keep an eye out for. Chris Sale's been nasty. He finally got his first win, but he's been nasty so far. The Rays are 6-7. Their starting pitching's been decent, and that's going to have to carry them. But the biggest story out of the AL East, and the one I'm getting the most enjoyment out of, is the Blue Jays are off to a 2-10 start. So all of those brand new Blue Jays fans that we saw in the last two seasons are probably jumping off the bandwagon, putting their brand new Blue Jays hats and jerseys into the fires at this point.
Yeah, they're not going out and buying those red Blue Jays hats. That's a god-awful uniform. I love that the Blue Jays are struggling because it's just they're back in the basement where they belong. All these fans that came out of the woodwork can go back and watch hockey again and just stop it because it's embarrassing. You're embarrassing yourselves for coming out for 2 years. The fact that they're struggling is just phenomenal to me. But you know, you got to believe that their starting pitching is going to come back and get them into some games. I do believe that their offense is going to struggle. I think Tulowitzki is getting up there in age. Donaldson's really, to me, the one of,
he's hurt.
Well, he was one of the biggest beneficiaries of Edwin and Encarnacion, and you're going to see a dip because Encarnacion is not there, and he really doesn't have that support that he did in the lineup. Tulowitzki's not the same guy. Bautista's not the same guy. So I think we're going to see a decline in offense significantly, and maybe their young pitching can bolster them back up, but you know, we'll see. Hopefully not.
Well, the thing about the Blue Jays is they're a way better team than 2-10, but they're going to put themselves in a hole where it doesn't matter. They just might not be able to climb out of it.
And
they might be putting themselves out of the race early.
The Rays are one of those teams that are going to be just a pain in the ass, I think, all year long. They have a scrappy bunch, so if their offense clicks on a certain day, you know, they can support it with good starting pitching because the top of their rotation is pretty good with Archer and what's his name? The dude with the funky delivery. I can't even think of his name right now. But Cobb. Thank you. They have the pitching in the rotation that can sustain some ball games and come out and just be kind of a pain in the ass. Their bullpen's trash, and they have enough.
Jumbo.
They have a lot of the same guys, it seems like, on offense, too. You know, like a lot of those scrappy dudes who...
Yeah, a lot of mediocre utility players,
so
other than Longoria. And
they'll play good defense.
Yep. Okay, let's get into mailbags. Before we do, though, please take a minute to rate and review the podcast in iTunes or whatever it, or wherever it is that you listen to us. If you enjoy the podcast, give us a 5-star review and rating, and Scott and I definitely appreciate it, and it helps us out immensely when people are searching for these podcasts. Okay, the first mailbag is from Mike, and he says, this question is probably in the back of everyone's head, so I'm going to ask it. As of now, we're on a 6-game win streak, and I think everyone is wondering, is this win streak a fluke? We've been horrendous with RISP opportunities during the streak, but we've gotten bailed out by incredible starting pitching in our bullpen. I know for a fact that we will not get this type of pitching out of our starters for the entire season, but I also do think our offense will pick up once Didi and Gary come back. So, we've kind of touched on some of these points, but another thing to why this streak has been going on is because Headley and Ellsbury and other veterans like Gardner, who has 5 stolen bases, are playing extremely well. So that is actually not something we expected. We expected the kids to carry the team. So are we a little nervous that these veterans are going to tire throughout the season and this isn't going to last, so we might be watching a fluke?
No, see, I think everything that we're seeing leads us to believe that this is not a fluke. The fact that, you know, the mailbag came in when it was a 6-game streak. It's now a 7-game streak. The fact that we were not hitting with runners in scoring position. The fact that some of these guys are hitting the Headleys, the Ellsburys, the Aaron Hicks of the world. And the other guys with Didi not playing, with Sanchez not playing, with Bird not hitting during this whole streak. This is something that, to me, can be sustainable. Because are all these veterans going to play at this level? No, they're not. But we're going to have the kids starting to come up, and with Sanchez hopefully getting back and 100% healthy, and Didi 100% healthy, we're going to be getting support in that sense. And to me, there's going to be a nice carry through when you get those guys back. So the fact that you're still winning and not hitting with runners in scoring position is a good thing, because at some point you are going to hit with runners in scoring position. So, and you're looking at the pitching. While Michael Pineda was dominant in that one start, we haven't seen dominant starting pitching per se. I mean, CeCe's been good.
No, but we've seen they've been getting in. CeCe's been great. But they've all gotten, like I said, they all got into the seventh inning. That's all you out of in today's game. You don't need your starters right to go past that. And especially with the Yankees bullpen. So that for the Yankees, starters getting into the seventh inning is dominant and is good enough.
I just think the everything that's surrounding this winning streak to me is just leads me to believe that this team is good and that this team can, when healthy, can go and play.
This is dangerous. We might be getting.
Hey, I'm not saying great. I'm not saying they're the 1998 Yankees and going to win.
Dangerous. You use the word dangerous.
They can be dangerous. I mean, and they know it. You listen to Greg Bird's interview after the game last night, and he was a little bit more off the Jeter script and talking about
good.
How he knows
good.
That this
Let's
team
get some personality.
Yeah, he knows that this team has confidence, and they talk about it, and that the spring training put the Yankees on the map, and now they're kind of showing guys what they can really do, and that they thought they were going to go out and surprise the people. They have confidence. The young guys have confidence. The veterans have confidence in the young guys. They're showing them their way. Obviously, you're seeing Headley not only take that leadership role that he said he was going to do, but he's doing it off the field and on the field. Ellsbury's playing better. Aaron Hicks is playing like the Jackie Bradley Jr. This is a team that seems like when you mix the beautiful mix of veterans and young guys can sustain winning streaks, and I love it.
Thing. Okay, so you just touched on it. I do feel like this team is gelling.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
It feels like a team. The young guys and the older guys, it feels like a cohesive team. It might not be the best team, but it at least feels like a team instead of a bunch of guys in a lineup.
And think about what's happened in the past. We've touched on this. There's been a culture of winning in the Yankees in the minor leagues for the past couple years. And when you're seeing what happened last year with all of the championships that they won in the minor leagues, these guys are used to winning. The guys that are coming up are used to winning, and they're used to playing together. The Greg Birds, Aaron Judge, Sanchez, you know, all these guys, Severino, they've played together. They've won together. They taste it. They know what it tastes like. They know what it feels like. And now they're trying to do it on the major league level. And I love it. They have confidence, and they're saying, why not us? Why not now? I love it.
Okay, what do we have next?
Whew, I'm getting too pumped up. The next mailbag is from Zach Waters. I fully recognize that jinxes aren't a thing, but I can't help but be a little aggravated that Sterling was throwing the P word around very liberally starting around the fourth inning. Can we all agree that it shouldn't be a thing until at least after the fifth inning? That being said, let's get day game Mike to show up a little more often, please.
So a couple things with this mailbag. First, the last, he said day game Mike, and I kind of was, I was interested. I was like, are his splits that much better in the day versus night? And there's a little something to it. He's made 36 starts in the day, and he's got a 3.62 ERA. And he's made 66 starts at night, actually now 67 after last night, and he's got a 4.2 ERA. So for whatever reason, he likes pitching in the day a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know, because it's half the starts also. So it's the sample sizes are also very different. To me, that those stats are pretty damn close.
Yeah, definitely pretty damn close. But as far as the so I said I don't believe in jinxes when it pertains to no hitters and perfect games. So I have no problem with John Sterling saying using the P word. The fourth inning maybe is a little stupid, but... But hey, that's the John Sterling effect.
Yeah, throwing it around in the fourth inning is you know, even on a... To me, that's not even jinxy. That's just way too early to even talk about it, because there's a lot of baseball still to happen. But the one thing I've talked about, announcers who are calling the game, and especially when you're on the radio, their job is to, you know, lay out what's happening right now. For people that may not have been with them the entire game and are listening to it, maybe they started in the third inning. The radio announcers have a unique job where they have to tell the story of the entire game, you know, at many more points than your color guys and your play-by-play guys on television as well. So I don't know. These guys have to describe the game and what's going on. I don't mind if they are saying it. It's the fans to me. Like, I'm not saying it. I will never say the word in the middle of it because I will jinx it. And that's why. But the guys who's their job to call the game, I really don't have too much of a problem.
Yeah, I agree, even though I don't believe in perfect games.
But fourth innings early just to talk about it in the first place, because it's just too early.
Definitely. And it's always fun to watch the players in the dugout not sit next to the pitcher once he's got a perfect game or a no-hitter going. It's always fun to watch. Okay, this one is from Brandon, and he says, if Chase Headley has another month like he's having, will Andrew man up and apologize to him? The people want to know. The easy answer is no. I will expect a thank you from Chase Headley for motivating him to be a good player.
Okay, so that was a cop out, but the apology is something that will never happen because you believe that there's nothing to apologize for. So, I think the real thing that the people want to know is, will you acknowledge? And as of now, in my opinion, you should right now, because he's been one of the catalysts and carrying this team into the winning streak. You know, there's a point where there needs to be a recognition and acknowledgement for Chase Headley being a good player in 2017 and playing well.
He's having the complete opposite of last April. Last April, he was so abysmal. He didn't have an extra base hit. So whatever he did the rest of the season, his stats were going to be kind of skewed because he was so bad. Because we looked into the numbers, remember? And after June, he was actually a decent player. He was slightly above average. But his stats at the end of the season looked terrible because he was terrible for 2 months. Now, he's so good. He's batting .400. I know it's only 2 weeks, but let's say he plays amazing for the next 2 or 3 weeks, his stats are going to be skewed in the other way. So he could suck for the second half of the season and still end up with a really good season. So I don't know what the date is. It's going to be a fluid situation. I just need to use the eye test. And if Chase Headley, I don't expect 400 the rest of the year. That's obviously unreasonable. But I just expect a slightly above average from a $13 million a year. 30.
Okay, so when we're looking at the eye test and we're looking at what's happening, thus far into the season, what's your eye telling you? What is your eye telling you? What do you see from a Chase Headley? You have to see the confidence in this guy. You have to see the fact that he's producing. Obviously, yes, the 400 is not gonna hold up. But you look at everything else just by the eye test, like you were saying, and he's passing it right now with flying colors.
You're totally right. That confidence, he had no confidence last year.
Well, and granted, I mean, he
definitely has confidence at the plate right now, and that's a good thing.
Next one is from Joe's McFly. If CC keeps pitching like this, then wouldn't it be smart for the Yankees to bring him back on an Andy Pettit-like deal? he says, AKA year to year.
The next one kind of goes with it as well. It's from Joshua. With Pineda and Sabathia pitching well so far this year, do you see either of them back in pinstripes next year? If this trend continues, which one would you prefer? So CeCe's made three starts and they've all been good. 1.47 ERA. And each time out, he's gone deeper and deeper into the games. First outing was 5 innings, then 6 innings, and then 7 innings last time out. Pineda, after his first bad start, has been really good, and he backed up his perfect game bid with a really strong start against St. Louis. I'm still taking these guys need to prove it to me for the rest of the season before I even think about offering them a contract.
Well, I think Pineda for sure. There's no doubt about that. He's really got to put an extended amount of starts together and show that he can be the guy with, that has the confidence in the coaching staff and the team, because he just hasn't shown it yet. And we can't go off two starts. I mean, great. He's been awesome for these past two starts, but he needs to prove it for a longer stretch of time. Sabathia is an interesting guy because we talked about this over the winter about what's Sabathia going to do after this. He says he wants to keep playing, but is he really going to want to go and pitch somewhere else for a 1 to 2 year deal? Is he going to get a 2 year deal anywhere else? Probably not.
There's no way he will.
Yeah, this is a guy that I do see similar in the Andy Pettitte or Kuroda. I think this is a guy that wants to be in New York, and if he does have a good season and he proves that he can come back and pitch, you know, to the not like to the effectiveness over the past three starts, because he's been phenomenal, but if he can be a good 4 or 5 guy, then, you know, he may be an attractive 1 year deal to bring back, because I personally think that he does want to, if he extends his career and he keeps pitching, it's going to be here. I don't think he's going to go somewhere else, take a 1 year deal and, you know, do something all over again. I think that's where he's got to be comfortable in the spot. He doesn't need the money.
I don't remember if you and I were talking about this on the podcast or off the podcast, maybe when we were in Tampa, but we were saying that CeCe, if he wants to pitch, he's only going to really want to pitch in New York. It's for the Yankees, but maybe he'd pitch for the Mets. I don't know, because he built that giant mansion in Alpine. He lives there year round in New Jersey. So he's not going to want to move his team to, I don't know, Oakland or LA or name your city that would sign him for a year deal. So I think he is probably saying, I want to pitch, but I really just want to pitch for the Yankees.
Yeah. And you got to believe that he looked like he was having a lot of fun last night. When you're watching Pineda pitch, they were talking about that CeCe is, you know, has been getting in Pineda's ear, you know, in counts where, or in situations where sometimes I guess Pineda would, you know, lose his focus and you see CeCe barking at him. So they obviously have some kind of a relationship. I think CeCe really likes being around these young guys too. I think he also is feeding off of the energy that the young guys are putting up. Like we said, he's like the dad in the clubhouse. I think he really likes the dynamic of that too at this point in his career. And he's still proving that he can be a different type of pitcher and still have success. He's not the big, you know, 90, high 90, mid to high 90 guy, but he's still touching 92, you know, 90, and it's still effective. He's using the off speed a lot. So I agree totally. The fact that he has roots in Jersey, he's in the tri-state area, he's not going to want to pick up and go for a one-year deal. The Yankees would probably give him that one-year deal, a la like a Kuroda. I feel like that's more of a good comparison, just keeping giving that one-year deal until it doesn't make sense anymore.
Yeah, and this pitching staff is still going to be a huge question mark as we move to next season, and especially with Kaprielian needing Tommy John surgery. I think this happened after we recorded on Thursday. So that was a guy we were kind of eyeing for next year's rotation, and that's not a possibility anymore. So they're going to need to fill the spots, and maybe CeCe can fill that spot. Okay, this Twitter question from Angel, or Angel, at ABX Runs. He says, who calls the pitches for the Yanks? Is it from the dugout / Joe or the catchers alone? Maybe a combo. And I think he's asking specifically because since Romine has been the starting catcher, the pitching staff has looked pretty damn good.
Yeah, I think there's, if you look up and down the coaching staff and what's happening on the Yankees with the catcher position with Girardi, Tony Pena, and then having Romine as obviously the guy who was well known for his defensive prowess behind the plate, I think they're formulating game plans. I'm sure Girardi has influence on the pitch selection during the game. I don't think it's in every pitch. I don't think Romine's looking over to the dugout for pitches from Girardi, but I guarantee they talk in between or at least prep beforehand if something's not working. I think it's more of a fluid situation, and there's a lot of conversations happening. There's a lot of really good minds in the Yankees dugout when it comes to defensive catcher, and obviously Sanchez is in the dugout too, so they're all talking. I think it's a combination of everything, but I don't believe that Girardi's sitting there calling pitches.
No, I don't either. And first of all, it wouldn't be Girardi. Wouldn't it be the pitching coach, if anything?
No, I mean,
like Girardi's got enough stuff.
Yeah, but I think Girardi has influence on that. I mean, Tony Pena also in there as a catcher. I think there's a lot of influence on there, but I don't think it's a pitch by pitch by any means.
Romine's been great, and the pitching staff has been great. It's obviously a small sample size, but we saw Sanchez for the last 2 months of last year handle the pitching staff beautifully. So I'm not worried that when Sanchez comes back, this is all going to fall apart.
No, me either. I'm not worried about that at all. I think it's what they're doing is they're building a lot of confidence in the catcher pitcher relationship with the whole group of them. To me, this is a positive thing. They're finding things that work, and it's not like there's a competition with Romine and Sanchez. It's not like there's a bad blood thing. Whereas if McCann were there, there'd be some kind of a controversy. We all know who the starting catcher is. It's not a matter of discussion. So the fact that Sanchez is coming back, I guarantee they're all working together, formulating these game plans. You know, he's probably excited that Romine's having success and seeing and going to take, you know, some of what Romine's doing and implement it in his game plan when he's catching. So I think this is all positive. I think this is all a very, very good thing for the nucleus of the catching staff.
Okay, what do we have for the last one?
This is from Aaron Rose. He says, I need a backup team to listen to when the Yankees aren't on. Which current team has the most former Yankees on the 25-man? I caught a Pirates game and Nova was thrown to Cervelli and made me wonder where everyone else might be.
Damn, Nova to Cervelli, Pirates game. That's like watching a 2013 Yankees game.
That's, I don't know if you want to keep, I don't Not know if you want thing. To keep watching those games, but.
Yeah, I kind of was just browsing some rosters. The Pirates obviously have Nova and Cervelli. The Mariners have Cano and James Pazos, if you were a James Pazos fan. And Ben Gamel is in the minors. We kind of said maybe he'll make the Major League roster, but he did not. The Twins have our old buddy Phil Hughes and John Ryan Murphy, who's in the minors. The Marlins have Mattingly managing, which I think is might get people more on the Marlins bandwagon than anything else. And the Eduardo Nunez is for the Giants.
Yeah, so basically look around the major leagues and you're seeing a bunch of ex-Yankee scrubs or cast-offs a la Cano. There's not really that many guys to root for. I mean, it's not like we've had great teams in the recent past that pulled guys away that we were like, oh man, I wish he was still on the team. Like that guy doesn't really exist very often unless you're looking at Cano.
Yeah, they stay with the Yankees.
Yeah, unless you're looking at Cano, but no, I think Mattingly is probably the one to look for the Marlins, but no, the Yankees are on enough where you can just watch baseball and be a baseball fan.
Well, yeah, you'll say that's true. I've never heard of someone saying that there's not enough baseball on. Yeah, but the Marlins, it's like, yeah, I'm going to root for the Marlins. Then you're like, yeah, they're in Miami and they're the Marlins and there's 12,000 people in the stadium. I don't want to watch this. This is depressing.
Yeah, I mean, if you have like Jeter as the owner, Mattingly as the manager, you're looking at something there maybe that you can like, you know, maybe you're getting mad that Jeter's the owner there. I don't know, but
I still say A-Rod needs to buy the Marlins and Jeter needs to buy the Rays, and they need to just have that rivalry going in Florida.
I just don't think Jeter's going to buy the Rays because I think he knows that they're not going to be in St. Pete or Tampa, whatever the hell they are, for very long. There's no way that team's staying there. It's just impossible.
That would also be weird with that dynamic, the Yankees' presence in Tampa, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would be very strange. It would be very strange.
Let's also clarify that Jeter is not going to be like the George Steinbrenner of a baseball team because he doesn't have the money to buy a baseball team. I think the Marlins were valued at like $1 billion or something like that, which to me is asinine, but whatever. So he would be sort of like the Magic Johnson of the owners, right? He'd be the face, the celebrity face of the owners.
Kind of like what he's doing with the Players Tribune. I mean, I don't how much day-to-day activity does he have with the Players Tribune?
Oh, he's in there editing in the back end on the back end of the Players
Tribune. Yeah, he's making sure that all the grammar's right. Dot in the I's or crossing the T's, making sure everything's good.
I guess it's always one of those things that when the Yankees aren't in the playoffs, I'll sort of jump on a bandwagon of a team that's fun or whatever. Last year, for me, it was the Indians because of Andrew Miller. But there's not like I don't have a second team.
Yeah, no. If there's a team that I pull for in the National League a little bit, it's the Dodgers only because I used to watch them in spring training when I was a kid. But I have no idea what the Dodgers are doing right now. If there's a game on, I'll watch like an inning or two, but watch Rich Hill get pulled for blisters and then just thank my lucky stars that he is not a New York Yankee.
Yep. Okay, thank you to everybody who submitted mailbag questions. If you want to do so, go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast or call the voicemail line 646-480-0342. You can tweet the show at Yankees Podcast. My Twitter handle is at Andrew_Rotondi. Scott's is at Scott Reinen. And remember to use the code SWEEP if you want 25% off in the fan shop. Scott, anything before we get out of here?
Yeah, just the last thing that we didn't really touch on this because it happened after our last show, the Caprillion injury. Everybody's kind of up in arms about, you know, what's going to happen with him. He's going under the knife, going to get Tommy John surgery. And I think what we look at this and we're seeing it's unfortunate, but it's probably going to be the best case scenario for him because in all honesty, I think we were going to be looking at injury after injury after injury after injury for this guy if you were to stay with it. So I think it's honestly long term. If we're looking down the road, this is probably the best thing for him to do. And as Yankee fans, we should be, you know, not happy about it, but at least you know that he's on the right path to hopefully fix the arm rather than prolong these injuries and us deal with it.
Happy that it's happening now and not after he's made 5 starts in the major
exactly,
leagues.
Exactly.
And it's kind of one of those things that it was a slap in the face or a wake up to reality in the sense that, oh, right, these are prospects and this is fickle. This could all crumble very quickly with a few injuries or a few guys not panning out. So kind of like a rude awakening. But that's why it's so great that they've amassed so much talent, because 10 years ago, if we had James Caprillion, he was our only prospect. And if he didn't work out, we didn't have any prospects.
Yeah. Ryan Taylor.
Yeah. All right, everyone, we'll talk to you.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.